Hello and welcome to IVF BFF with me, Sian.
And me, Catherine.
A podcast detailing IVF in real time and shining a light on the experience of infertility.
Join us as we lift the lid and demystify all things fertility, sharing our stories, the highs and the lows, and everything in between. Guys, we are back on the mics. How are you doing, Sian?
I'm fine. How are bloody you?
Oh, I don't know why I'm laughing, because it's not funny at all. Yeah, there might be some swears in this one, guys, because it's been a bit of a fucking shit show. There we go. Sorry for the swears.
It's completely fair. And just to say, anyone who is listening, this is just a little trigger warning.
We are going to be talking about, sadly, the last time we left you, I had a positive test, which was great. Sadly, things have gone south, and we will be talking about pregnancy loss and treatment of pregnancy loss, including surgery. So if this isn't for you right now, cool. We're going to, as we always do, we keep it real, but we're going to try and bring, I don't know, some of the light and shade, if there is any. Yeah. But, you know, I hope this isn't going to be an unbearable listen and to not bum people out too much. But I think it's important, because there'll be people going through the same, that maybe they feel they might feel a bit more heard hearing it. But if it's not for you right now, guys, press pause, skip on, go back to some of our early episodes.
Yeah, just protect your hearts, everybody.
Yeah, come back to it or not, whatever you need to do. So that's
Okay. So what the actual fuck?
Right. A lot has happened when did we put out? I got my positive test. So if you're just joining us now, well, probably go back and listen to our previous episodes. I know a lot of people have been like really on the journey with us, but we got our positive test on the 15th of May. Today it is the 10th of July. So a lot has happened. Shall I just kind of talk you through it?
Mm-hmm.
So obviously it was our second transfer, frozen transfer. We were over the moon and we thought, oh, we've done it. The first round in January, sort of early February, failed sadly. That was our first ever transfer, our fresh go. And that really hit us, you know, like a ton of bricks at the time. It's very strange. Obviously now, sadly, we've had a pregnancy loss, and I get it. It is more to lose a pregnancy loss. But that first loss, like the embryo loss, hit us. That was more shocking, I think. And we'll get to this in the feelings, but with this loss, I at least know that things will get better. But in January and February, I was like, God, we've never been here before. But then we got our positive test in May and we thought, oh, it was all worth it. It was all for something, you know?
I mean, It all makes sense
yeah. Now. The first one didn't work. And I remember saying in the episode, I was like, God, I've had it easy compared to a lot of people. Not anymore, my friends. But you know what I mean? You do think, wow, God, two transfers and we did it. Great. And so, you know, anyone who's had a positive test will know that, especially after a long journey. So we're now on 2 years. May was 2 years trying, so just over 2 years trying, 2 years, two rounds. But as soon as you see those two lines, you start planning a future and you start going, you do the maths, you do the scan maths. Okay, when's the early scan going to be? When's the, you know, NHS, first NHS scan going to be? When am I due? You know, and yeah, like we just focused on a January due date, fantastic, you know. And you just plan. We finally felt like we could plan our lives, like, and move on and be out of the holding pen, you know. Mm-hmm. Like IVF, you can feel so stuck in this sort of like waiting room, and you know, you're waiting for your name to be called, and it's like, oh, we can plan for our family. And I kept saying, I think I said to you, Sean, didn't I? I said, oh my God, we get our family holidays. Oh, I don't want to cry this early. No. Like, yeah, it's fine.
It's not fine. It's not fine.
Yeah, we get our family Christmases, like, yeah, all of that stuff. It seemed to be falling into place, you know. Okay. Then everything in early pregnancy was fine, looking good.
Okay. You had your viability scan, which is a shitty word to use, isn't it?
A viability scan. Now, we had it a week early, and it's really funny how these things are all lining up. And, like, I'll kind of come to it. There's a weird spookiness about it because we had it a week early because I was spotting. Spotting in early pregnancy, not always a problem. Not, you know, nothing. Can, when you look it up, yeah, can be sinister, cannot be. It's one of those things. But ACU, our fertility unit at the hospital, weren't concerned. Then it happened a second time and it was pinker because the first time it was brown. And any kind of bleeding, God, in those early days, you're just like, mm-hmm. Oh my God, absolutely beside yourself. Yeah. So yeah, you were, because, you know, it's an anxious time. But a lot of the time it's absolutely fine. And also, even the second time, ACU still weren't that concerned. They were like, mm-hmm. just, if it's going to make you feel better, come in. So I went in for an early scan, a week early. It's meant to be 7 weeks. We went at 6 weeks. And at 6 weeks, all looked good. So we went in because we were like, yes, actually. Because they said, you know, we know that a week longer is going to be torturous for you. So, yeah, we went in at 6 weeks, had a really good scan, a really great scan, everything looking good, measuring, even at like, because when you go for a scan, they measure the baby to see if it's growing in line with where you should be in your pregnancy. Measuring a couple of days ahead even. I was like, oh, overachiever here. Really great. Had a heartbeat, you know, and it was, I'm so glad we had that because we had a joyous scan. It was, obviously we were like so nervous going in because especially with the spotting and stuff, but you just are, aren't you? The IVF life makes you, we know too much, right? And but everything was good. Like that moment when, and I know this is probably a contentious thing to say because I'm so aware that not everyone gets this, and people who are doing IVF or struggling to conceive, and even people that miscarry often don't get to a scan, and that's devastating. But I feel so lucky that we got that joyous scan, because there's nothing like the moment where you see that heartbeat, you see everything going right, and you're just like, sorry, I'm making Sean cry now.
I just find it really hard because I just really thought that when you came back with that news, when you voice heard me, I was like, that's it, you're over the line, mate.
Yeah, got a heartbeat. And statistically, the chances drop after you hear a heartbeat of miscarriage, which is great. But the stats mean nothing to us now because we've been unlucky. We've fallen on the wrong side of them. But, you know, that's an amazing thing. We've got that scan. Actually, a friend of mine gave me a little silver photo frame when it all did go to shit. And we put our scan picture in there. And for us, that's the right way to kind of commemorate it, because we're going to keep them on the fridge. And we put all of our embryo transfer scans on the fridge as well. And we were like, oh, and now this one is a pregnancy. And we'll put them all on the fridge and watch them all grow. And obviously we couldn't do that. And so, but I didn't want to take it off the fridge. I was like, that's too, but this lovely friend of ours gave us this little photo frame. So that's now on our mantelpiece, on our little chest of drawers downstairs. So that's nice. But I'm so glad we got that. And then, yeah, for like the first, you know, few weeks, I'd say I was anxious. There was anxiety. But I was pretty good at keeping it in check. Mm-hmm. And I was pretty good at rationalising it, going, no, come on, things are more likely to be okay than not. And I, you know, for the first time, Sean, I felt like I could join you, didn't I? And that was nice. Like, you know, I'm glad that... Oh, God, how am I going to get through a whole podcast? Okay, I'm glad that we had that time and I could finally talk to you about pregnancy stuff, and I just didn't feel able to before.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, like, I kept really... saying to you, didn't I? I kept saying, do you think it's all going to be all right?
Yeah, I know.
As if Sean knows everything. And you were like, yeah, I really think so, you know? Because as well, you've been there and you've been through the anxiety and you've seen everything be okay. Mm. And I think that is really important to say too, because I know that this episode might come across a bit like doom and gloom, but, you know, guys, there is hope. It's just my story. It's not everyone's story. Please don't be scared. Don't, you know, I don't want to let this scare people, because Sian, you've had the polar opposite experience, and thank God you went through all those checkpoints and everything was fine.
Yeah.
And, you know, everything's still going well for you, I should say. Like, we're not gonna dwell on it.
But... just want to add that I am eternally, eternally grateful.
God, of course you are. Like, no one is doubting that.
Like, really, I am.
No one is doubting that. Yeah. Of course you are. And finally, I felt like I could talk to you about pregnancy stuff, and you were guiding me through it. And, you know, it was nice to be in your camp for a little bit, even if it was just a little bit. Yeah, because it's so hard, you know. I'll come to all my other friends having babies in a bit, but it is hard. And finally, I felt like I could rejoin everybody else, you know, and I could be in the gang and in the club. And yeah.
You were using the statistic reassurer as well.
There's this website called the Miscarriage Odds Reassurer website. For a lot of people, I'm sure it's very reassuring. Because every day, well, I was going on it every day. Every morning I put in the amount of weeks and the amount of days we were. And I would see the chances of miscarriage go down and down and down. And the chances of a pregnancy going forwards and everything being fine going up and up and up, and especially when we've got a heartbeat, those are the stats, but for me now the stats, and for Carl I know he feels the same, the stats don't mean anything.
Yeah,
like we've fallen on the wrong side of the stats. And when we miscarried, we had about a 4% chance of miscarrying at that stage. And I know people say, you know, before 12 weeks is the danger zone, blah blah blah, but it's like, actually, when you get to 8, we had a heartbeat as well confirmed. Yeah. So it just doesn't make sense to us. But then we went,
what happened?
It was all ticking along.
Yeah.
And then we had a midwife appointment, and that was on a Wednesday. And on the Tuesday, I sat at home and I went, I think we need a scan. And this was just approaching 8 weeks. I think the Thursday of that day would have been 8 weeks exactly on the dot. So I just sat there at home and I was like, we had a private scan booked in for 9 weeks. Because we're trying to space them out between, you know, the early scan, one private, an NHS scan next, and, you know, try not to spend all of our money on these scans, but that's what we do. And I was like, we need to move it forwards. And then on Tuesday, I booked one for the next day on the Wednesday, the same day as our midwife appointment. That was partly because I couldn't sit there at a midwife appointment where, and this is what happened, we made it to that midwife appointment and we walked in and, you know, sat down with the midwife. Very bizarre walking into maternity, by the way. Like, suddenly you're in the land of pregnant women. Mm. And
there's a lot.
There's a lot. And there's pictures of babies on the wall. Mm. And it's very bizarre. I felt like I was overjoyed. It felt like an actual dream come true to get in there. Like I've been accepted in. But I felt like we'd snuck in. But I said, I cannot sit in front of a midwife talking about a baby. And, you know, this, I get it. Most people will go to these appointments and be like, yeah, great, amazing. Mm. But it felt so soon to be talking about, she was like booking for some NCT classes. I was like, what?
Yeah.
Like, I can't sit there without then going for a scan and knowing that it's real, that it's still going okay. And so I booked it for the kind of late afternoon, the earliest possible slot I could get was about sort of 5:15, I think, at this private scanning place.
You had a later one, didn't you? And then you managed to move it.
and I managed to move it forwards. We were meant to go at like 8 o'clock or something. Managed to move it forwards. Thank goodness we did, kind of. Because then we went for this private scan, and now the private scanning places are so weird. Mm. Like, there's a few of them floating around. This one is really convenient for us, and it's annoying because we can never go back there now. I'm like, for fuck's sake.
Yeah, no, never.
But yeah, we've got to find a new place if we're so lucky to get pregnant again. But we went in, and they're weird places because they're so geared towards, you know, gender reveals and like buy this key ring for a picture of your scan and here's this extra, have your baby's heartbeat put inside a teddy bear, all of this shit that, sorry, like, I know a lot of people like it,
but it's not medical. Do you know what I mean?
It's not for, it's not why we're there. No. We just want to know everything is fine.
Yeah.
And then at this private scan, we found out that things weren't looking good at all. So at first, so she was like, yep, measuring the, and you, they measure the gestational sac, so the embryo's sac, and that was measuring fine at 8 weeks, you know, which is what we should have been. And then she was like, oh, your baby's measuring at 6 weeks. And I was like, shit. Okay, that's 2 weeks behind. And she was like, I can't find a heartbeat. And I was like, oh, fuck. And, you know, Carl was sat there and I just remember him going, this is not happening. This is not happening. And I was just like, I was just saying, oh, no, oh, no, oh, no. And then she did find a heartbeat. She said it's very, very faint. She was like, hang on. We were so confused at this point because it was like, well, is there, isn't there? And I suppose it just teaches you it's not clear cut all the time. But yeah, she was like, yeah, there is a, I found a heartbeat, but it's really, really faint. Mm. So we knew that there was a heartbeat on Wednesday night, which is why it's so weird that something in me made me book a scan for Wednesday night. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Like, I was like, was my body telling me that now is the time to, like, see it whilst it still had a really faint heartbeat? I don't know. And, you know, I had also thought, I was on a lot of progesterone, and I know that progesterone can, one of the good things about progesterone is it can stop you bleeding. But I was like, if I was miscarrying, would I know about it? And I think, yeah, we briefly spoke to ACU and they kind of said the same. Yeah, that's probably what happened. We've got a follow up next week, so we'll find out more. But I reckon the progesterone masked the miscarriage. So yeah, we took this scan kind of report. Actually, they emailed it to me because we just flew out the door. I was just like, we're going to A&E, because the route, obviously by then it's out of hours. And the route for all pregnancy concerns up until, is it 16 weeks?
18.
Around then, after that point, you get a direct line to maternity and you can call them up with your problems, and they have out of hours services. But until then they say go to A&E. So we went to A&E, and I don't think A&E is the place for a miscarriage, and it was chaos, absolute chaos. And we actually had, that was probably the worst part of the whole thing, well, apart from actually finding out, you know, that,
yeah,
which I'll come to, was going to A&E, because nobody knew what to do with us. And we had a really stressful time there. Obviously, we're like so upset, like beside ourselves. So I'm sat there sobbing. It's really busy as well because it's like 5:30, 5:45. Everywhere's just shut, all the departments with, you know, normal kind of working hours. So I'm just sat there, first sat on the floor, which is fine. Well, it's not fine. But like then we got a couple of chairs and, but I'm just sobbing, absolutely sobbing my eyes out. And then they're trying to do my blood pressure. I'm like, oh, it's going to be really high. Then, you know, no one knew what to do with me, really. They tried to contact EPU, which is the early pregnancy unit, to see if anyone was still there to scan me. So they did try that. No one was there. They'd shut up shop for the day. And so they were like, well, we'll get you to see a doctor tonight, and we'll do some bloods. I had a nurse tell me, she was taking my blood pressure and she went, you know, just try and be a bit more positive. And that was a knee-jerk reaction. I was like, sorry, what? Like, I told them all about the private scan and how the baby was measuring behind and we only had a very faint heartbeat. But because I wasn't bleeding or cramping, I had no physical symptoms, they all just kind of went, well, you'll be fine.
Like, oh, no.
You know, and like the first nurse who's told me to just be a bit more positive, I literally looked her dead in the eye and I went, hun. Cole was like, you hunned her. I was like, I did hun her. Oopsie. I was getting quite sassy with them.
Sorry. Fair enough. How dare someone tell you to be positive? That's like the same ilk as people saying, Just relax. Yeah.
Yeah. And medical professionals as well. And I was like, oh, you don't know what to do with IVF patients, especially. They didn't understand the progesterone thing. I said, no, because they kept saying, well, how long have you been bleeding for? Well, I haven't because I'm on a lot of progesterone because it was a medicated transfer. Fell on deaf ears. The fact the baby was measuring 2 weeks behind, no one knew what that meant, really. I had another nurse get me to do a pregnancy test.
Oh.
She got me to do a urine sample. She told me that she once thought she was having a miscarriage, but she was too determined, so she didn't lose her baby.
How dare she?
I mean, what? Then what am I?
How dare she?
And then the same nurse was like, do a urine sample, please. And I said, are you going to make me do a pregnancy test? She said, yeah. And I said, please don't. I said, all that will tell you is there's HCG in my system, and there will be HCG in my system. Telling them what they should know, right? She was like, just do it. So I did it, came back blazing positive, obviously. Yeah, and she went, see? She said, there you go. You're still pregnant. You're fine.
Sorry, at this point, do they expect you to walk away and go, oh, okay, I'll wait until 12 weeks?
Absolutely. Ridiculous. I mean,
it's unbelievable. Sorry, yeah. It actually makes me laugh because I cannot believe
it. It is literally ridiculous. And obviously we're just really upset. Then we saw, and I just kept saying to people, it's just so much to lose. It just feels like so much to lose at this point. Breathe. You know, because of everything we've gone through to get here. And like, I've always said miscarriage is awful. Miscarriage for everybody is awful. Like, from the moment you pee on a stick and you see two lines, you've got a baby. You're planning for your baby. But miscarriage after IVF, after a struggle, like it's not like we can just go, oh, we'll try again next month, or, you know, like an element of that hope has gone already. Mm-hmm. And you've been through so much to even get here. It just feels like it shouldn't be allowed, but there you go. But yeah, I just kept saying to people, it's so much to lose. It's just so much to lose. And there was one male nurse that was really amazing. And like, he was called Ray, and he was a little ray of sunshine. Aww. And he was really concerned, and like, that's what you need in that moment. And I have spoken to A&E. I need to follow up with them, actually, because I had a long chat with the head matron about some of these comments and some of this treatment, which I didn't think was appropriate. And she's assured me that things are going to change, fingers crossed. But I mentioned Ray as well, because he was really concerned. And all in that moment we needed was someone to just say, this is really scary and we're going to take it seriously. You know, I didn't want people to help me feel better. Another nurse the next day when we went back told me that God has a plan.
Oh, and I'm like,
I don't believe
it.
In your God. Like, no. And you know, if some people have said to me, I'm praying for you, and that's nice. I don't mind that at all, even though I'm not religious. I'm like, however you want to send love out there for me, cool. But like, I don't believe in your God. I don't believe that God... that there's a God that has a plan for this necessarily. I'm not saying I don't believe in anything, but I'm not particularly that way inclined to be thinking. I just, so inappropriate. But Ray was great, and Ray took us aside and he said, look, he said, if you stay here tonight, you're going to be waiting 4 hours to see a doctor, but I will make sure when your bloods come in, I'll take your number and make sure a doctor calls you tonight. Go home and then come back in the morning, but a doctor will call you tonight. And then he said something like, and I wish I could remember the wording, he said something like, it's the two of you now. Yeah. Which was really sweet. And he just he just said the vibe was like, it's the two of you together, you've got each other, like you two versus the universe, which was really sweet. And just like, everyone's different, everyone takes comfort from hearing different things, but that in that moment was a bit more comforting, because it wasn't trying to offer any solutions. It was just saying like, you know, stick together, you know, you've got this. Anyway, so then a doctor did phone me that night and said, look, your best bet is... My HCG tests were inconclusive because no one had done an HCG test. HCG testing for your blood test is only worth it if you do several.
Yes.
So you know where it starts, because you don't... No one had known if mine had fallen or anything.
But also some clinics, when you get a positive result, they measure HCG straight away, and yeah, then they monitor it. So
they
then
see it growing.
Exactly. So then you kind of have an inkling, I suppose, if something's not right.
Yeah.
If the HCG falls.
It does drop. I don't think it would have dropped anyway, just because I was still doing positive tests and stuff. But a positive test is not an indicator of HCG, I know. But she said, your best bet is to come to A&E tomorrow, go straight up to the front desk, and they'll, you know, say that you've been told to come here and you're being given an emergency referral, an appointment that day at EPU. So we went back the next day, said all of that, and then we got booked in at like 11:30. We went in at 8 a.m. and so I was like, no, you need to see me sooner. And even Carl was like, that is quite good actually, come on Catherine.
But also, like, you had a lot of hours to kill. Like, what the hell
did you
do?
Yeah, we had, by that point, we had at least 2.5 hours. So we walked, our hospital's quite close to Richmond Park. We went and sat in Richmond Park. We went to a cafe, had a breakfast. Another place we can never go back to. Brilliant. It's quite a nice cafe as well. Gutted. Had a breakfast sandwich with bacon and egg, which was actually quite nice. Isn't it weird, these little details? And then, yeah, and then we went up to EPU. And EPU, no one is there for a good reason. No one is there, really. Some people are there for gynecological things, but a lot of people are there because they're worried, because there's concern, there's bad news. So it's a very strange atmosphere. And yeah, we had our scan. They finally brought us in. And yeah, they were great. As soon as I arrived at EPU, I felt calmer, at least. And I felt like, okay, we're with people that know what they're talking about, that you know, we're in the right place with the right people. And obviously we'd been sent home the night before, and we were just all over the place, didn't know what was going on. But I'm like, okay, we're going to get some clarity, and you just want to know at that stage. Also, this all happened on the 12th of June, which was my mum's 70th birthday. And like, we were meant to be meeting my whole family for lunch, like locally. And Carl was like, we need to cancel. And I was like, no, it might be fine, but it might be fine and we can go. And also I was like, I'm going to ruin my mum's birthday. Do you know what I mean? I was like, oh, it shouldn't have been the first thing on my mind, but I was like, oh God, I don't want to. Because the ripple effect when something like this happens, obviously you're hurting the most, but then, you know, my parents, they want to be grandparents.
Yeah.
Like, they were so excited. You know, and hopefully they will be again. But yeah, so there was that as well. But I was like, it might be fine. But I knew that either way we'd get some clarity. So we went in. Yeah, and then we had the scan. It's so funny because, you know, I explain we're IVF, but she still explains the probe, the dildo cam.
She explained
I'm
it.
Like, hun. Yeah, she's like, you might feel some pressure. I'm like, oh, hun, I'm used to this. Come on. Get it in there. Yeah, so, and then she had a little look, and just this, I'm sure anyone who's been in this situation of sadly having a miscarriage will relate to this, the silence, because they have to concentrate and they have to look, and that silence before they say anything. Oh, and I think I tried not to look at her face, because you try and read their expression. Try to go, is it good, is it bad, is it, but like, they obviously have to take their time. But most scanners, even, you know, lovely Laura who did our scan at ACU, she was like, I'm going quiet, it's not for a bad reason. Obviously this person couldn't say this in EPU, but there is often a silence, but the silence before, like when you know it's not good, is just excruciating. And so yeah, and then she said, I'm so sorry guys, it's not good. Yeah. And she said, there's no heartbeat. And I said, no heartbeat. And she went, yeah, no heartbeat. And that's when our world just, the bottom fell out of it, really. Yeah. Oh. And I know, that was the, you know, no, the moment I knew actually was just before that, because I took both reports in and I said, look, the report from yesterday's scan shows as smaller than at 6 weeks. The baby is smaller. Can that even happen? And she said, yeah, it can if it's a failing pregnancy. And that was like a sledgehammer. She wasn't being unkind. That's just the terminology. And also I appreciated kind of clarity, but it is a horrible term.
That is a slap in the frickin' face. That
it felt like a sledgehammer. That I was like, like that hit me like a ton of bricks. But that's the moment I knew that. And she was like, let's do the scan and see. That's when I knew, game over. But you know, yeah, so yeah. And then, you know, she says, do you want to see it on the screen? Now I did, but Carl didn't, so Carl looked away. But I thought, if I didn't see it, I wouldn't believe it. And I needed to see it personally. And everyone's different with that. It's such a personal thing, I think. Yeah, sorry. But as I say, there is something weirdly comforting. How weird that I booked that scan early.
Yeah.
And on Wednesday night, there was a heartbeat. And on Thursday morning, there wasn't. And so we know at some point, and it's so hard because, again, not everyone gets this. Some people find out about a miscarriage and, you know, sadly things stop developing a little while ago and stuff. But I take some comfort in knowing, we know that the heart stopped at some point between Wednesday night and Thursday morning.
Yeah.
And that makes me feel like I was really kind of present with it. And it's a silly thing to say because you're always present. It's with you. It's your baby. But I felt like I really had a mind to it. And I was really sort of like, you know, like watching over it almost. You okay, Sean?
Yeah, sorry.
Sorry.
You don't need to apologise. My God, it's just, it's horrendous that you've experienced this. And I know lots of people do, but this is awful, really awful.
Yeah, it's shit. And you know what? Someone said to me, oh, I bet that miscarriage is a big part of the conversation around IVF. And I said, no, not really, because yes, it is. It goes hand in hand. But I think a lot of us, we're all terrified. Mm. We're all terrified of it. It's our worst nightmare.
Yeah.
It's our biggest fear. So I said, it doesn't come up. I was actively going, I don't want to hear about that. You know, when we got our positive, even when we're going through a round of IVF, you don't want to know. You don't want to hear about it.
No.
And we do know because the worlds are linked. But yeah, I really thought that that IVF was our struggle and I thought that was our hard. And it turns out there's a crossover and there's a weird sort of imposter syndrome. A lot of people were sending me, which is really, really kind and it will be useful, like resources for miscarriage, help, you know, I've got a couple of books in the post from friends and stuff. But I'm like, no, that's not for me. I'm not in that camp. I'm not in that club. But and then you have to go, oh God, yeah, you are. There's this crossover. You tick both boxes. Mm. So then after that, we went straight up. I'd, ever the pragmatist, emailed Laura at ACU saying, hi, Laura. Like, what's the next steps? You know, like, just letting her know, really, that we're currently in EPU. And, yeah, it wasn't good. We went back out into the waiting room. And that's where I was like, I couldn't stop crying, just could not stop sobbing my little eyes out. And I was like, God, I'm going to trigger all these women who are probably worried and sad. And I was like, oh, get us out. But then you have to wait and be talked through your options because it's a miscarriage. So nature hasn't kicked in yet.
Sorry, some people may not know, because I think that is fairly new term. Actually, when it comes to miscarriage.
I think a lot of people don't know about it. No. And a lot of people think that you bleed and you cramp and that's it. That's your body, like, takes over. But there's something called a miscarriage where your body still shows you no signs of miscarriage. It still thinks it's pregnant. You still get positive pregnancy tests. You still maybe have the symptoms and everything. Mm. I didn't have many symptoms now. So now I'm like, ooh. That you look back, you question, you're like, was that a bad sign? But you just don't know. It's not as simple as that. But Yeah, and then it's only normally picked up at a scan. And it can be really cruel because I kept saying, you know, my body will tell me if something's wrong. Miscarriages are rarer, but they do happen. And it's only at a scan that you'll find it out. So we had to be taught through our options for, you know, properly ending the pregnancy. And but I'd emailed Laura and she was like, when you're done at EPU, come up and see me. So aww, she was brilliant. Yeah, no appointment needed. We just went up there. It was a bit weird walking back in because when we walked out before we were discharged, we were like, woohoo! Yeah. Like, such a different feeling. But yeah, after we were talked through our options, we went back up, saw Laura, who gave us the most massive hug in the world. Just sat down with us for 10 minutes and just let us talk it out. And like, that is amazing. No appointment needed. Just come up. We'll find a time for you. So yeah, big, big thumbs up to ACU. Then we, so we chose, I mean, you get presented with these options as to how to manage your miscarriage. You can leave it and let nature take its course, but that timing is quite unpredictable. And will it kick in? Will your body do its thing? You can take medication, which will kickstart everything, and then your body takes over. Or you can opt for surgery, a surgical management, which they used to call a DNC, a dilate and cartilage.
Yeah.
Curative.
Yeah.
Oh, what is the C in DNC? Dilation and curatage. But nowadays, and they used to go in there and kind of like cut stuff out, which is horrible, but you know, but now that surgery is a lot gentler and they go in with a bit of a suction cup and it's like rubber, it's like soft and it's not as harsh. But we were given all three options and we chose the, yeah, like you say, you're like, oh,
wow, great.
What options do you want?
Yeah.
Like choosing from the world's shittest menu.
Yeah.
Where you don't want anything.
Yeah. No thanks.
No thanks. I'll go to a different restaurant. But we went for the medication to kind of kickstart it all. They were like, great. Well, they weren't like great, obviously.
No.
Right, okay. And they were all super. We spoke to a nurse called Katie, who reminded me of Miriam Margolyes, and she just gave us a massive hug. And she went, it's shit, isn't it? It's so funny. And then some of the medication you insert vaginally, and she's like, you might not be comfortable putting it up your vagina. And I went, oh, babes, I've just done IVF. I've had loads of things up my vagina. Mm. And that made her laugh. So there's, you know, there is laughter to be found somehow. And then, yeah, we took home the medication and they said, do a pregnancy test in 3 weeks. If it's still positive, let us know, because that might mean you need further intervention. And listener, that's exactly what happened.
Of course. But between
of
then,
of course,
you went on a lovely holiday.
Oh, we did. Also, I should say, leaving the hospital was very strange because obviously we've been there since, you know, 8 a.m.
Yeah.
By the time we left, it felt like such a long day. I expected it to be like nighttime. But of course, it was only like 2 o'clock in the afternoon when we left. And I was met by bright sunshine. And we walked out and it was a lovely day, gorgeous sunshine. Obviously, we had to cancel our lunch with my mum and dad, which was very sad because they had to know about it all too. Carl made that call. I couldn't make that call, that phone call. But it felt offensive, the sunshine.
Yeah.
It felt like a real slap in the face. It probably would have been worse if it was raining, to be fair. But it felt like a real slap in the face of like, how dare it be sunny on such a sad day? And like, how dare everyone else go about their business? You know, how dare the world keep turning, really? When like our world has totally fallen apart, you know? So that was, and I say that because I'm guessing other people might have had the same thoughts when they walk out or when they like, you know, have to do something routine and every day, like, I don't know, then they get home and they get their gas bill or whatever, or do you know what I mean? It's like, why is the world still turning? Why isn't everyone stopped? Like, can I demand a national 2 minute silence, please? But yeah, so we went home, you know, we were together and everything, we took the medication and, you know, and it's hard to say what I'm not going to say in too much detail because that probably is really triggering, but obviously you have to pass the pregnancy. People don't realize that because we saw our neighbor on that weekend, and she knew about that, you know, we'd sadly lost our baby, and she was like, so sorry guys, you know, we saw her with her baby in the park, really good, we had our dog, we had our baby too. And she was like, what are you up to this weekend then? And I was like, having a miscarriage, like. And I said, well, the physical stuff hasn't happened yet. And she went, oh, okay. I was like, oh God, I've made her feel really awkward now. But people don't know. People do not know that you have to do that. So that was a bit of a shitter of a weekend. But it's so funny. In those moments, I think your brain does sometimes protect you. I thought that would be by far the most traumatic bit of it. I was so numb, like so numb to it. And so sort of like, okay, got to get on with it. Gotta just, I don't know, I feel like sometimes your brain can take the emotion out of it for you, which is a very weird experience.
But that's because it's so traumatic and so awful that, like, I guess if your brain didn't do that, you would, I don't know, I mean, I know you've fallen apart a lot in this last few weeks, but it would
in this
have been,
episode, mate.
Well, yeah, true. Yeah, but it would be like, you wouldn't be able
it
to get
be
up.
It would be too much.
You wouldn't get up. Would you?
Yeah. And I know it's different for everyone and not everyone's going to have had that experience. But, you know, I was at home. I was in my safe space, had my boys, had Carl and the dog. And then after that, we went on a nice holiday, which we had booked before. And we went to Lisbon in Portugal. Bit of an adventure. Carl likes to be away on or around his birthday, so it's have recently been his birthday, so we went to Lisbon, and I was like, when we booked it, I was like, oh god, first trimester, like a hot European city break, not sure. And then when it all went wrong, I was like, thank god we booked it, like, actually, yes, this is exactly what we need. And it's really weird because people say, and it was lovely, we had time together, just us two, which was really important, and we had some time not thinking about it all the time. By this point we were 3 weeks on, so yeah, when did we go to Lisbon? A couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, it wasn't long.
Yeah, about 10 days ago.
Yeah.
And it was lovely, but people say, you know, just go and switch off from it all, just go and completely, and it doesn't quite work like that. It's never, it, you know, it, you can be sad at home or you can be sad on a sun lounger by a pool.
Yeah,
I know what I prefer, but it doesn't really take the sadness out of it completely. And so we did do that. That was nice. And it's that thing of, we tried to go on holiday after the first round, but again, I think we'd learnt from the first round. The first round was just a bit too, I didn't want to go anywhere. Like, there was nowhere. And we had, on paper, you know, a nice time. Like, we saw some family, which was lovely, which was really needed, actually. We saw Carl's mum and dad that were down there. But, like, that was quite a sad holiday, really, because I didn't want to be anywhere, whereas this was a bit more positive. But just to say, guys, like, book the trip, do whatever you need to do. But if it's not the trip of your dreams, don't beat yourself up, you know? Like, I feel like a lot of people have probably experienced the sad holiday.
Yeah.
Sadly. But yeah, then we came back, and then it was 3 weeks and I did my pregnancy test. Actually, once a tester, always a tester. You know I love a test. The only time I don't test all the time is in an IVF 2 week wait, and I'm really good and I do hold out for that one. I don't know how, but the rest of the time I just do lots of LH tests, pregnancy tests, love them, love weeing on sticks. So I was actually doing tests from like 10 days and I was like, still positive, still positive. And it's the weirdest thing, looking at a pregnancy test and being disappointed that it's positive and seeing a positive and not being happy. It's just the weirdest thing.
That must be so messed up.
Like, oh, it's a real... yeah, mind boggle, that one. And it was still positive, so 3 weeks on it was still positive, faint, but, and I was like, well, it's really faint, you know, it might be fine. But no, they're like, any line is a line. So brought me back in for a scan at EPU, so we went back there 2 days ago, And they confirmed that there's, yeah, it's not quite completed. There wasn't much left. It wasn't huge, but they said, yeah, there's, get ready for another horrible medical term. Retained products of conception.
Who came up with this shit?
Guys, genuinely. Man.
Yeah.
No offense, man.
It's awful.
Or someone who's never been through it.
Yeah. I just...
It's the worst phrase ever. So I have retained products of conception in my womb. And they are, you know, I think even the medical staff go, yeah, we're really sorry. That's a horrible phrase. That's the medical phrase. But they don't want to say it either. And everyone was super kind. And we got talked through more options on a shitty menu. What are we going to go for this time? Yeah. And they were like, you can watch and wait for another 2 weeks. Or you can go for the surgery. And I was like, get it done. Mm. Like, I was ready to take some action, take it back a little bit of control. Mm. The watching and waiting it out is the right option for some. But for me, there's a risk no matter which way you do it. There's a risk of infection if you leave it. And there's a very small risk of scarring if you go for the procedure. And I know this will be on a lot of people's minds because they have to take you through all the risks and they say, well, you know, it can affect you getting pregnant in the future. And I'm like, what? That's not what I need. It's already hard. But, you know, they have to tell you this and it freaked me out. But then I was still kind of resolute with that we were doing the right thing. And if it reassures anybody, because then we were booked in for the next day. I was like, if we're gonna do it, let's get it done. So I had that yesterday, so it's really fresh, you know. And I spoke to our wonderful friend Emma, the embryologist Emma Whitney, and I said, look, I'm going for the surgery. Do you think that's the right thing? And like, no one can tell you, it's your choice. But she was like, look, yeah, she's like, the greater risk is infection. You don't want that. Get it done. You know, your instincts are correct on this one. Mm. And that was the right decision for me. Everyone's different. And then a lovely gynecologist, a lady gynecologist. I don't know why I say lady. It doesn't matter, but I don't know. It's just something about women to women.
And also gives us a picture, I suppose, of who this is.
Really, her name was Izzy, and she was an angel. And aww. I loved her. She said, what we're doing now is giving you the best chance of getting pregnant again. Because I said as well that we'd had IVF and it was a struggle to begin with. And she was like, what we're doing now is the best course of action for you. We're, you know, getting it out, reset. And you know, you'll have the best chance of getting pregnant again, and that's really reassuring. And I just know there'll be people scared of the procedure, really scared of any kind of risk of scarring. So I just wanted to say, obviously I don't know, like I'm hoping I don't have any complications or anything, but they have to tell you the risks. Don't let it eat you up and choose the decision that is right for you, because all risks are small, really. And something has to be done. So yes, went in yesterday for the procedure.
Also, I wonder if you said to them as well, because you obviously would have, you said it's IVF, obviously, that if they know that.
Oh, I tell everybody.
Of course.
Tell everyone about IVF.
Absolutely. And as
by the way,
should.
This was IVF. I'm special, so.
Or like try and link every conversation to IVF.
Oh, obsessed. About podcasts. Get some more listeners.
Yeah. But they would have known that and would have gone, right, we need to be super, super bloody careful, I would hope.
Yeah. Yeah, and like careful, you know, they're always careful. The team were absolutely brilliant. But like careful with my emotions.
Yeah.
I did have one doctor in theatre before they put me under ask me if I had kids. I was like, oh, hun. I was like, you know that I'm here for a miscarriage, right? The thing is, that doctor didn't know about IVF. And I said, no, and it's really difficult for us to get pregnant in the first place. But even so, even if I had another child, what is he expecting me to say? Like, yeah, it's fine, I've got another one. Do you know? Yeah. No. Like, as a rule, let's not ask people who are there for miscarriages if they have kids.
Yeah,
he was just being conversational, but let's stop using it as small talk, guys.
I'm pretty sure, though, that like doctors have these, you know, like role play training. You know what I mean? Yeah. With actors, you would have thought an actor would have turned around.
We
and gone,
should. We should sign up for that, and we should give them a tough time. Give them the nightmare Karen patient from hell.
That would be actually hilarious.
Not that that is us. Not that we are nightmares.
No, but we'd be fair.
Give them an IVF patient. God. Anyway, so yeah, I had that. The procedure was all fine. I did get put up into theatre and then taken back down again because I was bumped for a life-threatening emergency that needed theatre. Fair play, that came in through A&E.
Yeah.
And I was set, and again, Izzy, lovely gynecologist, I said to her, I was like, and they're all like, we're so sorry, I know it's really hard when, because they were doing like the pre-op checks and everything. I was in my gown, I was on the bed and everything, didn't have the cannula in yet, but yeah. And she said, I'm so sorry. And I said, no, it's fine, I'm not urgent, other people are urgent, they need it more than me. And she went, yeah, but we know you're here for something really difficult. And that was a nice acknowledgement. Like, that's what you need. You just need an acknowledgement from medical professionals that this is actually really hard.
Yeah.
And the procedure itself is not hard. It took about 15 minutes. I was under for like 45 minutes by the time I woke up. But they just an acknowledgement that emotionally it's big. You know, so got it done. But I said to you this morning, didn't I, Sian, there was some relief in getting it done and dusted, and get, like, I'm like, maybe we can draw a line now under miscarriage and just close that chapter, and I hope to God we never have to open it again, you know. So went home last night, had a takeaway, obviously
obs,
all medical big appointments require a takeaway afterwards. You know, we're exhausted is the word. Like, both Carl and I are both really drained, and we would be today, of course, but there's like a physically I feel my normal self now. I'm not sore,
really.
Yeah, like egg collection was way worse. And again, everyone's different, not everyone suffers like I did after egg collection. But after egg collection, I was struggling to walk, you know. I was so tender, like in my abdomen and everything. But this, I walked the dogs, so I was absolutely fine. But there's a general exhaustion in my body, I think.
I couldn't believe that you voice messaged me this morning saying, yep, I'm out with the dog. I was like, what the hell?
What are you doing? Yeah, I've just had surgery. But I do, I feel all right. You know, I'm lucky I didn't have anything weird from the anaesthetic. No one was there to film me in case I chatted shit again, which is a bit disappointing. Because I like to get Carl to, after egg collection, I was like, film what I say. It might be funny. But just came round. They put a tube in you for a general to help you breathe, and that was a bit weird because I woke up and it was still in there, but I was that stuff's weird. But you just have to surrender a bit and go, right, okay, just let myself be looked after, I think.
Yeah
And then by the end of the day, I was bloody itching to get home. I was like, can you discharge me, please? Can you please let me go home? Kept bugging them, but
So do you feel like, I mean, obviously, this chapter, we want to shut, but also, you know, it's there and there's a lot to process.
Yeah, especially from yesterday. I think I've stuck that in a box and shut the lid. Don't think I've really unpacked a lot of that. And it is important to say that I've not been at my therapy weekly, but I will pick it back up again because it's just, it's so important. There's so much. It's been such an intense 6 months, but also an intense month, the last 4 weeks. Well, the last round, really. Like, the highest of highs, like, you know, and the lowest of lows. That's the only thing as well, I would say. And again, like, this is a contentious thing to say. People hate it when they've had a miscarriage and they hear it. But I can admit that at least we know we can get pregnant. We were lucky to get pregnant. And I'm so glad we had, you know, the highest of highs celebrating it. I would not change that. And to anyone who has a positive test now and is feeling anxious, feeling nervous, I get it. And especially if you've listened to my story, you're probably like, oh God, I hope those people aren't listening, actually. But if they are, or if they're about to get a positive test, I hope that I can give some reassurance that it's okay to celebrate it. like try as much as you can, because I do not regret that time. I'm so glad we had that time celebrating it and being happy that it existed. The whole thing feels a bit like a dream now. Like it's very hazy. I'm like, God, because when we got our positive test, we were going, is this a dream? Are we dreaming? Are we going to wake up any minute? It feels like a bit of a dream turned nightmare. And then we woke up, but, you know, yeah.
Just got to get you back there.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I do feel the pressure. I'm like, I need to be pregnant by the end of the year. No pressure, guys.
Yeah, I do want to acknowledge how hard it must be. Also, even talking to me and how hard. Aww. No, but really, I think it would be very, very hard. And I really do feel a lot for you and Carl.
I am
really sorry that it's like landed in this way where both of us have had completely different experiences. It's shit.
Yeah, our stories are getting further and further apart, really, aren't they? And it's, you know, we started this and they were in such synchronicity.
Yeah.
And I feel like we're on separate train tracks, just like diverting away from each other.
Yeah.
But, you know, I would say, I think I've got a lot of friends who are pregnant at the moment. That is very, very hard. I think you're the only pregnant friend that I'm okay talking to, and we still can't talk about pregnancy stuff, can we?
Oh no, and of course I wouldn't dare. No, I know,
but I sometimes wish I could a bit more. But I think that's testament to the work we've done on our friendship, and we've done really bloody well.
Fucking hell, yeah.
Yeah, we've been through a lot. Yeah. And we've really like gone through some uncomfortable truths and some uncomfortable times with it. And also, you do get it. I know that you get it. Whereas, like, so I've got three friends at the moment, and I don't think any of them will listen to this. So they like, one of them has even said, I don't really do podcasts. So I'm like, okay, I'll say what I want. No, yeah. I'll be kind. But all three of them are due around the same time as me, and all three got pregnant very easily. One is one of my best friends who's having her second baby, and I'm like, oh wow, you're having two before I could have one. Okay, cool. Another of which have the same due date as us, as we would have had. It was their like third month trying. Cool. And then another one we bumped into in maternity, who was there for her 12-week scan, and it was a total surprise to her, like the pregnancy. And you know what? That's what we want for everybody.
Yeah.
Not necessarily like a surprise if it's not a good surprise, but we want people to have an easy journey.
Yeah.
I would never wish this on anybody.
No.
So I'm like, I'm pleased that you were spared this, all of those people. But even at the time, and all three of them we found out about when we were pregnant, and even then it stung a little bit. I was like, oh, your story is much easier than ours. Ooh, like, ouch. But, like, we had to do so much more. But then I said to myself, no, Catherine, come on, don't be silly. We're getting what we want. We're all getting there in the end.
Yeah.
And then we're the ones whose pregnancy has to not progress. And I'm like, it just doesn't make sense. We're struggling to make sense of it. None of it makes sense. There's no system. There's no wait list or, you know, loyalty card to your next in line to have a baby. You've earned this many loyalty points.
Avios, you know, points.
You get, yeah, exactly, you get your baby next. Yeah. There's no system.
No.
And it's really bloody confusing. We're like, well, why is ours like the one that shouldn't go ahead?
Yeah.
And why do their babies get to stay, and why does mine not? Why do ours not? And I said to you, Sean, didn't I, there obviously there's huge sadness, there's grief and there's sadness, and the sadness is about me and about us, and I can deal with the sadness a lot better, but the anger, there's a lot of anger, and that's, I find that by far the hardest emotion, because there's nowhere to send it. There's no one to direct it to. It's no one's fault. This is something that's happened. It's not my pregnant friend's fault. It's not our doctor's fault. It's not my fault. It's not Carl's fault. So who do we be angry at? Who do we direct that anger to? The world? The universe? Like, there's a lot of that. And that's the hardest emotion, I think, to kind of grapple with. And I say it because I know that other people will be feeling it, yeah, probably.
Yeah. And it's, you're right, what do you do with that? Because...
what do we do with that? It's the most unhelpful emotion. Apart but it maybe is... like scream into a pillow.
Take up some boxing.
Yeah, or go to a rage room and smash some things. Yeah. We might do that.
I've heard of that.
But how do we... yeah. And it comes out and it's misplaced. And it comes out at the wrong people. I get angry at the people whose pregnancies are successful, whose babies get to stay.
Yeah.
You know, whose IVF worked.
Totally.
Whose transfers worked. You know, yeah. The IVF folk, like, look, we're all in it together. I know that the struggle is awful with IVF, but you go like, well, who do I get angry at? And it's often those people, and it's not personal.
No.
And sometimes it makes you behave in shitty ways that you don't want to, or you have those shitty, again, ugly thoughts that you don't want to have. But yeah, that's where we're at.
You're never, but if you think about like the worst times in your life, and this is obviously top of the top for you, you're never going to be your best self, are you?
No.
You know what I mean?
You can't be.
Yeah.
And then... you know, you just have to kind of look for little glimpses of sunshine through the clouds. Like, we're meant to be going to a wedding with the friends that are due around the same time as us.
Mm-hmm.
And up until now, that's in August. Up until now, I've been like, not going. I can't go. I'm not going. But like, just this week, I've been like, well, hang on. Why should I miss out?
Yeah.
Why should IVF take another thing from me? It's taken so much. Why should I be sat at home, you know, up like sad? With the dog. I mean, I love the dog, but you know, like, why should everyone else go and I have to stay? Like, it's not the wedding I can't deal with. So, but even, and I still might not go, but even that thought coming through, I'm like, that's a little glimpse of, oh, sunshine. Okay. Good that I'm able to think that way.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think this happened with the failed round as well. There comes a point, and I said to you, where I get so tired of sending energy out and emotion out and like sadness, anger.
Yeah.
You know, fuck you, fuck you, fuck you, fuck everyone. Like, and at some point you have to turn it in and go.
Okay. How do you do that though?
Oh, just, it's so hard. But I feel like for me, and everyone's different, but for me, there comes a point where I just get too tired of crying all the time. And it's okay to cry. God, I'm the biggest advocate of it's okay to cry, but at some point you have to go, what am I gonna do to just help myself? What am I gonna do to make myself feel better? No one can make me feel better but myself. And by feel better, I don't mean like, you know, it's never gonna be fine. But how do we get, I describe this like basement level of infertility, and we just want to get up to ground floor again. And on ground floor you have the same worries that everyone else has in infertility.
Mm-hmm.
And partly it's to do with that hormone crash as well. That's intense because the couple of weeks, few weeks really, after something like this, your hormones just go through the floor.
Yeah.
And it's often the time when people are going back to work and you just can't focus. You feel awful. You feel tired. You feel so, yeah, emotions all over the place on top of the grief. But I feel like we've been in the basement level. So you've got the ground level of infertility where you can manage and you can cope with your day to day. You can do tasks, you can leave the house, you can, you know, you can get by. But we've been in like stuck in this basement level, and in the basement level there's no sunshine and there's no light. And there's no windows and you're just looking for that lift and you just want to get back up to ground floor.
Yeah.
So for me, I'm like, okay, get to ground floor. Your problems won't all disappear, but we can rejoin everybody maybe and we can exist in the world. Yeah. And so I keep looking for those little glimpses of light coming through, you know, teeny tiny. Sometimes they're so teeny tiny, but like, you know, I said to you before, I was like, I ate three meals today, or, you know, I went for a walk today, or, you know, I used to say in the very early, it's still early, it's still only, what, like 4 weeks on, but I used to say, right, up, showered, dressed, out the house. Yeah. And if I ticked off those things, I was like, okay, that's all I need to achieve today.
Yeah.
You know, and it's about putting in place those basics. How am I sleeping? Have I had any water today?
Mm.
Have I left the house today?
Yeah.
But it's so hard, and that's where you, I'm lucky, I've got an amazing partner. Not everyone does have a partner at all.
Yeah.
But people to kind of keep you ticking along or helping you.
And to check in on you as well. Mm,
it takes so much emotional strength to pull yourself out of a dark place with this fertility stuff. And we've all done it. And if you've done it, bloody well done, you know?
Yeah, and it is a real achievement.
And it's possible. It doesn't feel like it at first, but, you know, it is possible.
Makes me think of, I don't know if you ever saw that documentary with Jonah Hill. It was about his so quite a good documentary. I mean, I'm not a massive Jonah Hill fan with some of the things that have come out, but he had a psychiatrist, and the documentary's about the psychiatrist, and it's called Shuts or something. And the thing he always says is when people come to him, he's like top Hollywood type psychiatrist, and he said, the first thing I say to them is you have to work on your life force, and that's the only thing that you need to think about is food, exercise, sleep, literally what you've just said, the basics.
But sometimes even that list can feel too overwhelming.
Pick
one, maybe.
Yeah.
Like, get dressed, open the curtains, I don't know. Even if you get back into bed half an hour later.
That's okay, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, so that's where we're at right now. And we've got an appointment next week at ACU to discuss next steps, really. We are going for, I don't know when we'll be able to, not on the next period, I don't want to anyway, it feels a bit soon, although we just want success as quickly as possible. But I think realistically I we'll see what they say at ACU, but I would quite like to get back to some kind of treatment in September, maybe late August, September, etc. And we are going for another egg collection. Now, a lot of people have asked me this. They said, how come you get another egg collection whilst you've still got two frozen embryos? Mm-hmm. So we are in a really fortunate position in this sense, that we've got two more frozen embryos, but our ICB will let us have another egg collection. And it's because we're in Surrey and the ICB defines a round as one fresh and one frozen transfer.
Yeah.
We've had one fresh, we've had one frozen. So they're very literal about that. And they go, great, another fresh. And so they just take that very literally. And our hospital have said they've had to argue it before. Say if someone's got a lot of embryos and not everyone wants to do another egg collection. Mm-hmm. They've had to argue for people to use their frozen embryos for a third transfer for the, you know, the start of round two. But if we get offered it, we are happy to take. We think we'd be silly not to take another egg collection.
Yeah, I think so.
Because we just want to, we obviously want to finish our NHS treatment, ideally with a baby would be nice. But if we can't finish it with a baby, we want to finish it with as many chances and that we can maybe take elsewhere, that we can do privately. And of course, the expensive bit is egg collection. To do a whole egg collection and fresh, you know, transfer is the expensive bit privately. So we think if we're being offered it, we should take it on the NHS. So that is the plan next. But like I say, we'll have our catch up next week.
Yeah.
I was sat in, you know, pre-op emailing ACU saying, can we still have our appointment next week, please? Please? I might have begged. And Laura said yes. She was like, yeah, still come in. I was like, yes, because I was worried they might go, well, no, because now I have to wait 3 weeks and do another pregnancy test.
Yeah.
I, you know, you'd hope that's all done, but I was worried they'd say, well, wait until you're fully in the clear. But we're going in next week, so that will... Mr. Brooker's going to have some questions. He'd be like, oh, God, you're back, not you again.
Also, we want to get them on the podcast, don't we?
They want to come on, Mr. Brooker and Laura. I've named them now. Ha, ha, ha. You got to come on now. But I think they were getting clearance from the hospital.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. They have to check.
For a scandalous podcast like this. I said, it's all above board. We just swear a bit. sometimes.
Yeah. Not every episode, but this one definitely warrants it.
We'll say nice things about you if you come on. But yeah. Anyway, anything else?
No, just that we are going to be obviously documenting. We're doing more eps. We're going to be documenting Catherine's obviously journey for her next egg collection. We're also not going to stop talking to people because, you know, we want to do that. And we've got some exciting people in the pipeline as well.
Yeah, we think we're going to bank some eps. We've got an episode that I meant to put out before shit hit the fan and then it all went wrong and I still haven't put it out, and there it's with a couple of really good guests, so I'm gonna put that out as a bonus, I think. And also I want to do an episode with Carl about this, not quite the same way, because Carl's like, I don't want to go through it. I don't want to relive it, but the effects of miscarriage on men, because there's no support out there for men, so we'd like to do that as well. And then we're gonna, we thought, guys, there's no point doing weekly until I'm sort of back in treatment, and then we're going to live stream it. But how funny, at the end of the last series we're like, well, got nothing to talk about now, well, talk about something else, someone else, and now I'm like, spoke too soon, we've got more to talk about.
We even got messages from people saying, like, with all due can't respect, I'm not going to listen anymore.
I hope they come back. Guys, I'm still here. Oh, bloody curveballs.
God, I know.
Anyway, sending all the love to everybody. And I don't want to bum people out too much. Look, this was a tough ep, really tough, but there is hope, guys. I still have hope. There's hope. Sian's here for hope. Sian is the beacon of hope. It can work.
It can work. Yeah, I know.
It can work.
It's tough.
Yeah.
Stick
with us, guys. We'll get there.
Stick with us. Yes. Yes. And
we will get there.
Wherever you are on this shitty journey, you know, we are sending you huge amounts of love.
Yes. If you want to get in touch with us, you can Instagram us. Find us on Instagram at
IVFBFFpod.
You can email us at
IVFBFFpod@gmail.com.
Well done. It's been a few weeks.
It has, yeah. It's in my long-term memory. Actually, haven't.
All right, my love. Well, that's it for now.
That's it. Yeah.
Love you guys. Love you.
Love you guys. Sian. Love you too, mate.
Aww. And, speak to you soon.
Speak to you soon. Bye.
Bye.